This is a war between the government and the Tamil people.
I'm not a fucking terrorist. You are the terrorist.
People are crying out for justice in this country.
If you've got to be militant to achieve your aims and your aspirations, so be it.
There's a real hypocrisy from the big corporations.
The people from below will push for real change.
This Australia is going to be shocked, and then the public will say, what the hell's going on?
G'day, you are listening to RTR FM 92.1, The Sound Alternative, and this is the Indie Media Show, your weekly dose of grassroots activist journalism, and we are broadcasting from the unceded lands of the Whadjuk Noongar people. I'd like to offer my respects to them and their elders, past and present, and acknowledge that this always was and always will be Aboriginal land. Just me today in the studio. Me, Joni Boyd. Everyone else is doing other stuff. So it's just me in the chair with a couple stories for you. Huge thanks to Jeff and the On The Record team for another fantastic On The Record. That thing about the monkeys remembering stuff better than humans in certain tests, that's wild. That's so crazy. I'm so excited about that. I can't wait for the apes to take over. I reckon they'll do a better job. Jeff's having a big old laugh at that. On today's show, we'll have a chat with Palestinian writer and commentator Jafar Rahmani on Benjamin Netanyahu's becoming Israeli Prime Minister once again in a coalition with the far-right Religious Zionism Party. Rahmani will speculate on how much difference this will make for Palestinians living under apartheid on the West Bank. And later, thanks to Paradigm Shift, our mates on 4ZZZ, Andy Payne chats to Hannah Nag, a young climate striker in Brisbane, who's part of the Move Beyond Coal campaign, who are pressuring NAB and other banks to stop bankrolling the fossil fuel giants who are wrecking our country and our planet.
You're listening to the Indie Media Podcast, first broadcast on RTRFM 92.1.
The recent Israeli elections, the fifth poll to be held in the past 4 years, saw Benjamin Netanyahu returned to prime ministerial office yet again, this time in coalition with the far-right Religious Zionism Party led by Itamar Ben-Gvir. Even the Israeli president, Isaac Herzog, was caught on a microphone he thought had been turned off, saying the entire world around us is worried about the entrance into government of Ben-Gvir. From a Palestinian perspective, however, how much difference is this likely to make? Oppression is oppression, and colonialism is colonialism, after all, whether we call it left or right. Alex Wisson, Indie Media's Alex Wisson, had the opportunity to put this question to Palestinian writer and commentator Jafar Rahmani, who recently moved to Perth from the UK.
First of all, Alex, thank you for having me on. It's not often that we Palestinians are allowed to be heard. And this is an opportunity for me as a newcomer to Perth to tell Perth people and anybody who's listening in Australia the unjust of our situation. As far as the elections are concerned, it doesn't matter whether it's left, right, or center, blue or pink. The Zionist doctrine is to get rid of us, all of us, and to thieve our land totally from the river to the sea. I'm here to tell everybody who wants to listen, they will never succeed. They have been trying for 100 years to get rid of us. We are still there. We're still standing, and we're still resisting. What astonishes me, actually, Alex, is how, in the whole, most Western politicians are so cowed by the Zionist movement, and they would not dare to raise an eyebrow despite all the atrocities that they see every single day of the year in front of them on television cameras. This is amazing.
Well, that brings me on to my next question, Jafar, and just as a bit of a lead-in, and for those listeners who aren't familiar with the situation on the ground in Palestine, there has been a continuing wave of Israeli attacks on the Palestinian people this year, with regular bombings of civilian areas in Gaza, But the focus of the occupation authorities more recently has been on the Jenin refugee camp in the West Bank, where at least 16 resistance fighters have been assassinated and dozens of civilians murdered. And earlier this week, a 29-year-old Palestinian worker, Rafat Alizar, was shot dead by Israeli soldiers on his way to work. He's now known as the martyr of daily bread. A simple question, Jafar, after that long preamble, and you've already touched on it, why is the world not paying attention? And as you've mentioned in terms of Western politicians, why do Western governments in particular continue to either turn a blind eye or in fact support these crimes for crimes they surely are?
The answer is very simple. The Western politicians have convinced themselves that without Zionist money and without Zionist support, they will not get into office or stay in office. If I may, I will draw the attention of your listeners to a book that was published in the 1980s by an American senator. It's called They Dared to Speak Out. Unfortunately, his name escapes me. It's old age, you understand. In that book, he says that if you are an aspiring American politician and there is any debate in Congress about Israel, Palestine, and even if you abstain, you are considered against and you will have no hope in hell of being reelected. Another one, an African-American lady who from Georgia, who was elected to Congress, and when she went to office, they offered her a piece of paper to sign allegiance to Israel. And she said, I thought my allegiance are for my constituents, not for Israel, end of her career. Mm-hmm. Not only that, Western media on the whole is on their side. And if you and I say something like that, we are immediately accused of being anti-Semitic.
Sure.
Nothing of the sort. I'm not anti-Semitic myself. I have no qualm against Jews, Jews who are good people, who are brought up to believe that they are here on earth and they must leave it in a better place when they leave. I don't think the Zionists or religious Zionists are of that ilk at all. And this is another myth that Israel and the Zionists try to tell the world, that we, the Arabs and the Jews, have been at each other's throats for a long time. Nothing of the sort. We live together in harmony, business, neighbors. We even marry each other. Mm. I am married to a girl from Perth, whose father was a Jew. So that is a proof that the myth is just that, a myth.
Absolutely. You've touched on a very big subject there, Jafar, in terms of the question of the Israeli lobby and is it about American imperialism? Is it about the Zionist lobby? That's a subject of a long discussion, isn't it? But coming on to the next question, although this question does actually relate to the power, the influence of the Zionist lobby, because we saw recently in Australia that the federal Labor government announced it would rescind Scott Morrison's 2018 decision to recognise West Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. And now, despite the fact this was a very mild decision, certainly in my opinion a mild decision, taken by the Prime Minister Anthony Albanese, as it's simply in line with international law and consistent with the basic diplomatic position that the final status of Jerusalem should only be decided in a peaceful negotiated settlement, the Zionist lobby, In a word, it went nuts. It went crazy. It reacted with outrage. Were you pleased with Albanese's announcement, Jafar? And how significant was it, do you think? And in terms of that reaction from the Israeli lobby, what did you think of the backlash and also the backlash from the pro-Israel sections of the media?
Yeah. One should be thankful for small mercies. As you said, I mean, it's nothing magnificent and nothing bad. It's the status quo. This is the international law. But we must all understand, including you in the media, if you want to keep your job, that Israel is above the law. Nothing should touch Israel. Anybody can be criticized, not Israel. And the Morrison administration cynically removed it for their own purposes because there was an election in Is it Wentworth? I forgot the name of that place in Sydney. And because there is a large...
Oh, Wentworth, yes, sorry. Wentworth was his electorate, yes.
Yes, they did it to please the Jewish electorate in Sydney, and it backfired. The situation in Jerusalem is by international law and by many Security Council and General Assembly resolutions should be as you suggested decided through negotiation. But the thing is, and this takes me to another subject, which is the shameful Oslo Accords. Mm. The Oslo Accord stipulated that after 5 years of negotiations and Israel getting back land, they will start negotiating what is known as the final status. Nothing happened. Nothing. At the contrary, the situation in Palestine is worse. The Palestinian Authority is employed to police the Palestinians on behalf of the Israelis. And Mr. Abbas, who is not legitimate nor mandated, said on many times, security coordination with Israel is sacred. I, as a Palestinian, think Jerusalem is sacred. And I think Beit Lahem is sacred. And I think Nazareth is sacred. A treaty with your enemy who did not fulfill any of their obligations is anything but sacred.
Mm. Now, just a correction, Wentworth was not Scott Morrison's electorate. It was actually former Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull's electorate, but nevertheless, Jafar, you're right, that was an important electorate to the Liberals, and there was some cynical electioneering involved in that decision to recognise West Jerusalem as the capital of Israel. There's no doubt about that. 15th of November is Palestinian National Day. It'll be 34 years since Palestinian poet Mahmoud Darwish wrote the formal declaration of Palestinian independence proclaimed by Yasser Arafat from exile in Algiers. Ahead of this very important day, what, in your view, is the current state of the Palestinian struggle for statehood and freedom? Are things, on the whole, worse or better than they were in 1988?
They are much, much, much worse. We hit rock bottom. And the Israelis keep pushing. They are not satisfied until, as I said before, they occupy or they steal the entire landmass of Palestine, preferably with no Palestinians in it. Unfortunately, Yasser Arafat, God rest his soul, yesterday was the anniversary, the 18th anniversary of his demise. There are many theories how he was got rid of. I have my own, but I will not air it at the moment because that is not important. He's gone. Palestine is here. It's not about personalities. It's not about political parties. It's not about movements. It's about the land and the people. And my people are steadfast, and they have sacrificed for the last 100 years, they will continue to sacrifice. And I said at the top of this interview, the Israelis, the Zionists, and their backers will never, ever win.
And for the benefit of the listeners, there's actually a special Arab word for this. And forgive me, I'm not an Arab speaker myself, Jafar, but samud, steadfastness, is what Palestinians refer to in terms of their resistance to Israeli occupation. I feel I could probably talk to you for hours, Jafar, but we'll have to wrap it up. And I want to finish on a personal note, which is that you experienced the Nakba, the catastrophe, the ethnic cleansing of Palestine by the new state of Israel as a young boy in 1948. We discussed earlier the Israeli assaults taking place in Jenin. Jenin happens to be your hometown. How does it feel as a long-suffering Palestinian refugee yourself to witness the suffering of your people from so far afield, you know, here in Perth?
Well, look, Alex, it's extremely painful, but so profoundly proud of them. So I know my people. When the Nakba, the catastrophe of the loss of Palestine happened in 1948, I was 5, and I remember it as if it were yesterday. And I remember the Haganah and the forces and the aeroplanes coming and dropping leaflets to say to us, leave or die, and the tanks and the armor personnel carriers and the guns and the bombs. And we were fleeing through the mountains to a place of safety. But eventually, Jenin was liberated in 1948 by the Iraqi forces and the Jordanian forces. And there are lots of publications about this, Alex, how the leadership of the Arab armies led them down and asked them to stop. And we all know why, because most of the Arab armies in Egypt and Jordan and Saudi Arabia were manned by British officers. Mm. So how could they fight something they have created? We came back, and they never forgave us, because Jenin is in a place called Marj ibn Amr, Marj being a flat land. It's the Garden of Eden. It's in your Bible, the land of milk and honey. And they lost up after it, and they haven't got it. So this is the price that's gone away. And they have been raiding us since the 1950s, and we've been resisting since the 1950s. And just to go back a little bit to Yasser Arafat, when Yasser Arafat smuggled himself into Palestine, he hid in Jenin, and he was directing the Intifada from Jenin. We are rebellious people. We are very proud people. We are just people. We do not scorn or disregard anybody, and we are very hospitable and generous, and our doors are open to everybody. And that's what we thought the Jews were coming to Palestine in the early 1900s, were seeking refuge and a place of safety to discover that they are actually coming to replace us and get rid of us and steal our land. That's not on.
Perth-based Palestinian writer and commentator Jafar Rahmani speaking to Indie Media's Alex Wisson about the latest trials and tribulations of the Palestinian struggle in the wake of Benjamin Netanyahu's becoming Israeli Prime Minister once again in a coalition with far-right religious Zionism party. You are listening to RTRFM 92.1. My name is Joni Boyd, and this is the Indie Media Show, your weekly dose of grassroots activist media. And as the latest fiasco of the UN COP talks unfold in Egypt, students and young people around the world continue to demonstrate against a lack of action on climate change. Andy Payne from our sister station 4ZZZ, huge shout out to them for providing us with this story. Andy Payne spoke to Ahana Nag, a 16-year-old climate striker in Brisbane who is part of the Move Beyond Coal campaign, a new group that are targeting banks such as the NAB, who are bankrolling these massive coal projects. Here it is.
A bit about the Move Beyond Coal protests against National Australia Bank. But first off, I'm interested in hearing a bit about you. As a 16-year-old school student, how did you get involved in climate protests?
I think as a young person, it is super important to exemplify leadership and, you know, represent like a large population of young people that want change and want justice. Like, I'm part of the largest generation of youth in history, and we are the agents of change.
Were there things that inspired you to get active? How did you go from somebody concerned about climate change to somebody who's involved in the climate movement?
I have personally felt how it feels to be a victim of the climate crisis, and it has taken me some time to understand that I'm also a catalyst of climate action. As a lot of people, I feel a lot of financial anxiety, I worry about my future, and I understand how the climate crisis directly contributes to like issues concerning employability and like the economic crisis.
So you've joined a group called Move Beyond Coal. It's a fairly new part of the climate movement. Can you tell us a bit about who is Move Beyond Coal and what are the aims?
Our roots are in the Stop Adarning movement, but now this week we have NAB Brisbane Branch Crawl for the Not Another Dollar NAB Week of Action. We are addressing the hypocrisy and greenwashing of NAB at the moment and holding them accountable for financing big coal mining companies like Whitehaven.
So many people will have heard of NAB, one of Australia's biggest banks, but what about Whitehaven? Can you tell us about who are they?
Whitehaven is a coal mining company which has no climate policy and no plans to change and no idea for a clean green future.
So it's been a week of action targeted at the National Australian Bank and its funding of Whitehaven. What's happened in the week so far?
Well, we've had campaigns all across Australia. We've had march-ins, sit-ins. We have a bunch of grassroots activists doing speeches, asking for meetings and engaging with staff. And then we've got some amazing people singing and chanting and unifying our movement and really addressing what we want.
And what is it that Move Beyond Coal is asking NAB to do?
We're demanding NAB be held accountable for financing coal mining companies like Whitehaven because it's not okay, because NAB claims to be Australia's most carbon neutral bank. And clearly this is just an example of greenwashing and just simply an ignorant approach to the climate crisis.
So this afternoon, the week of action will culminate in Brisbane in a branch crawl to different NAB branches in the city. Can you tell us what's happening?
We are starting at Redcliffe Place at 3 o'clock, and we are marching via Adelaide Street to the NAB branch in Queen Street Mall, and then continuing to march to the NAB branch near MacArthur Shopping Centre, right next to the post office. But yeah, we're going to be demanding change and showing employees and customers who actually care about the environment that NAB's actual intentions.
And I believe that this afternoon yourself and some of the other school strikers will be leading a digital storm of contacting NAB CEO Ross McEwan. Can you give us a bit of a preview of what kind of message you're hoping to send Ross?
Ross McEwan, you as a person in position of power must address your climate commitments and represent those most affected so we can have a sustainable environment, sustainable economy, sustainable future, and sustainable Australia. So please, Ross McEwan and everyone listening, join me and join the movement in moving beyond coal.
Okay, thanks very much, Ahana.
Thank you.
Huge power to him and solidarity to Move Beyond Coal over there in Brisbane, Meanjin. That was Ahana Nag, a young climate striker from Move Beyond Coal, speaking to 4ZZZ's Andy Payne. And thanks, as always, to Andy and to Paradigm Shift on 4ZZZ. You are listening to RTRFM 92.1. You're with me, Joni Boyd, for the headlines of Indie Media, your weekly dose of grassroots activist media. And yeah, here are some headlines you may have missed in the mainstream Australian media. In news from the UN climate conference in Sharm el-Sheikh, the group Global Witness found the number of delegates linked to the fossil fuel industry is 25% higher than at last year's COP meeting. That's more than 600 people, higher than the combined number of delegates delegates from the 10 countries most impacted by the climate crisis. On Wednesday, activists staged a number of protests at COP27. Youth activist Lucky Abeng of the Pan-African Climate Justice Alliance demanded rich countries pay poor nations for loss and damage caused by climate disasters, like recent floods in Nigeria that killed more than 600 people while displacing over a million. In the occupied West Bank, two more Palestinians were killed by Israeli forces in separate incidents Wednesday. One of the victims was 15-year-old Mahdi Hashash from the Balata refugee camp in Nablus. In related news, earlier this week in Geneva, Switzerland, Palestinian human rights group Al-Haq told a UN Human Rights Commission that Israel uses mafia methods of threats and intimidation to silence groups documenting Israeli violations against Palestinian rights. Ethiopia's government and Tigrayan rebels have agreed to facilitate immediate humanitarian access to all in need in war-ravaged Tigray and neighbouring regions. Saturday's agreement followed talks in the Kenyan capital Nairobi this week on the full implementation of a deal signed between the warring sides 10 days ago in South Africa to end the two-year conflict in northern Ethiopia. The two sides also agreed to establish a joint committee to implement the disarming of Tigray People's Liberation Front, TPLF, fighters as stipulated in the ceasefire deal, the statement said. A revolutionary court in Iran has issued the first death penalty against an unnamed protester. Iran's parliament voted overwhelmingly last week to call upon the judiciary to use the death penalty for protesters arrested at anti-government demonstrations. Some 15,000 protesters are currently held in Iranian jails in relation to the recent movement. In a statement, the group of 227 lawmakers compared protesters to ISIS and claimed the US and its allies are behind the demonstrations. The vote follows reports of widespread human rights abuses directed at jailed protesters. One female protester in her 20s told the BBC she witnessed physical and psychological torture, saying she could hear the sound of screams as prison guards beat young men in a cell next to hers. Back home, and WA Premier Mark McGowan has shut down calls to raise the age of criminal responsibility from 10 to 14, amid growing controversy over 17 children being transferred to the adult Casuarina prison. McGowan said he doesn't support raising the age to 14 under any circumstances, but said these kids' lives are very hard, saying many of them have fetal alcohol syndrome and other mental health conditions that are not their fault. The Premier also said that Banksia Hill is operating very well, despite Perth's Children Court slamming dehumanising conditions at the Youth Detention Centre, and footage recently emerging of three guards pinning a child to the floor and suffocating him.
You're listening to the Indie Media Podcast, first broadcast on RTRFM 92.1.